What's up, everybody? It's Jamel Gibbs, your family-oriented entrepreneur. Welcome to another podcast episode. This is the Business and Investing Podcast, where you learn all things business and investing related. Part of running your business is raising capital, right? You have to know how to raise money if you want to grow your business exponentially. And a lot of people don't know how to do it the right way. So we'll talk about some reasons why investors or people in general fail at raising money. And we're going to talk about how you can do it the right way with my man, Sal Buscemi. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself, man? We've known each other for a few years, but I want everybody else to have an opportunity.
Over 12, actually.
Over 12, man.
I was being modest, man. Yeah, I mean, I remember a long time ago we met. You know my background, but for people who don't, I started my career. I was supposed to be a doctor, but I never went to med school, thank God. But I worked really hard for this one doctor, and I wrote about it in my third book, Investing Legacy. And he had a brother who wound up made partner at Goldman Sachs. And when I passed out holding a fibula in my hand during my internship in college, I sort of figured that I probably didn't have the stomach for this, to be honest with you. And there's probably other ways for me to succeed in life without having to, you know, faint on the, you know, on the cadaver floor. And most of that was in the investment banking division during the, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, when there were a lot of companies that were going public. I pivoted and did a lot of distressed real estate. And what I did was during basically at the age of 29, I raised $30 million from a Park Avenue institutional investment manager.
Let's stop right there for a second.
Sure.
He said Park Avenue because Park he's Avenue. From New York, like me.
Correct. Yes. Right? Yes. Like
I just wanted
us.
To, I just wanted to bring that
like
out, man.
Us, not Park Avenue, Hoboken, Park Avenue, Manhattan. Okay.
That's right,
where all
man.
The hedge funds and investment managers are, the big JP Morgan building. That's where, you know, all the investment management is. And I was 29 and, you know, I had gone through some personal, you know, I lost my dad at 24 when I was working at Goldman Sachs, and I promised myself I'd have my first hedge fund or fund before the age of 30. And I did it. And over that time, it's been interesting. And we've pivoted, but we've mostly done a lot of distressed real estate stuff because that's how I was trained on Wall Street to do it. However, going forward to that, we do own Class A industrial real estate that we purchased in 2009 or we invested into as an equity investor with another very prominent family in 2019. And since then, because real estate was really getting kind of bid up for a little bit, we started pivoting. And we started doing kinkier things, Jamal, like I was telling you about before, like moving into like fine art lending and life sciences earlier stage investment, you know, alongside some of the smartest families in the world. But the reason why we're successful doing that, and I talk about this a little bit in the little Kindle Vela that, you know, we're talking about, is that I've only worked with the best people I can possibly find. And some of these companies, these a lot of venture capitalists, if you will, fall in love with the idea, but you got to fall in love with the jockey. And these jockeys have had like multiple exits. We're having one that I invited you to. This will be his 15th exit and 8th unicorn. So these are the types of people we want to invest into. But getting money for life sciences is not easy. Real estate is very easy, comparatively speaking. So I put together a little guide because I recently, as you know, moved to Miami. And there's a whole vibe down here. It's a tech entrepreneur vibe. But they don't have any bedside manners. And they're very, very aggressive asking you for money. And it's kind of like, you know, asking for a kiss on the first date or what have you. If it's coming on that quick, something's kind of wrong. So yeah. I actually, you know, was able to help one guy. He raised $150,000 because of a small tweak that I helped him with. And that's all in the book that, you know, we're talking about a little later here. But those strategies work regardless if it's you're doing anything with private. If it's real estate or venture, or your brother-in-law's dentist office, you know, they all work. But I think the problem is today a lot of people are like worried about pitching to VCs or pitching to investors. But the problem is that those aren't really the most strategic people maybe for your listeners to be talking to. They should be talking to wealthier families and rich individuals. And that's exactly what I wanted to talk to you about.
So how do you do that, man? Like if you have absolutely no knowledge on how to raise capital, how do you get in contact with these wealthy families? How do you like what's the best way to approach them?
You see, here's what it comes down to. The crypto world and the crypto boys, and no offense to any of your listeners here, but they've made the whole world transactional, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's sneaking into your DMs, you know, it's maybe probably you because you have a lot more media than I do. And they're like, hey, do you invest? If it's that great of an opportunity, why would anyone want to be involved in it? And what that has happened is that has changed, and that maybe social media to a certain point too, Jamal, is that this is a relational business. And when you're asking people to part with their life savings, that's the highest calling of sales in the world, really, when you think about it. There's no one else that has more of an important job than you do or more at risk than you raising capital for your own deals or someone else's deals. And for people starting out, I would strongly suggest them that they use the strategies to raise money for other people's deals who are smarter than they are in order to build a track record going forward. Does that make sense? But it's all relational. It's all relational. And actually about 3 years ago for that one industrial development that we have in Vegas, there was a YouTube video I put together with a very beloved podcaster named Oliver Graf. And that has had 75,000 views since I've seen it last. And people were hitting me over the head because there was so much in there. Like some of the tricks that I was sort of unleashing, I didn't know it, but I was just talking to him very casually, and I hope to have that same effect with you today. But I'm telling you, when you're meeting these wealthy people, you got to go to conferences. You got to go to places where they want to hang out, because people who go to conferences, who pay to go to conferences, are the people who have shown a conviction. And the old adage is true. You know, you are who you hang out with and everything. And it's really what it comes down to, the aspiring real estate investors. They all have like some sort of, for the most part, a lot of them are professionals or come from a different profession. So they're like doctors, dentists, accountants. Their network is only doctors, dentists, accountants. So they have to get out of that network and actually pay money to go to like some smaller events to meet other investors in order to get totally involved into it, much like you would your favorite binge watching Netflix special.
That's right, man. So you obviously surround yourself with the right people. Those conversations that you're having with these people turn into, mm-hmm. you know, business conversations, which can ultimately turn into money for you at the end of the day. That's correct. How you're doing it, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, everything is not like, you know, when I'll be really funny with you. I mean, it's pathetic, but it's true. Like mm-hmm. I moved to Miami and somebody I know who's very wealthy, he's like, oh, meet my friend Sal. So then you meet these guys, they don't have any money. They're pitching you and they all have like their iPad under their arm. And all of a sudden it becomes like a speed dating thing. I'm like, hold on. Hold on. Let me know about you. Let's talk about you. Let's have fun first. Let's, you know, before we get into this whole thing, you know, he's like going to like slides, you know, 17 of 47. I'm like, there's no way I'm going to sit out here this long going through. I'm like, just email it to me. Tell me a little bit about it. Mm. And you know, when you build relationships like that, then you want people on your team. And that's how you do it, is that you build relationships with people. And I'll be honest, you got to have the right investors for your deals. I know people who, oh gosh, I mean, it, just because it glimmers doesn't mean it's necessarily gold. There's a lot right. of people who came up with fake money during the crypto and lost it, and they had all sorts of problems, right? So I know crypto made a lot of people smart, but we're not talking about that right now. We're talking about people who are very wealthy, who have no desire to go into get-rich-quick schemes or, you know, things like that. They already have money, so they want to put it into something where they can get an income, it's secured, insured, and most importantly, they can show off to their friends.
Right. You know what's so funny, man? Just kind of going back to what you were saying, you know, a lot of people, they approach people with their hand out versus building a relationship with people. It's almost like asking somebody to marry you on a first date, right?
It's creepy.
Somebody says something to me. Well, I heard something. Actually, it was earlier today. He said, you don't make money in the office. You make it at the bar. And yes. What that basically meant was, you know, become friends first. You
it's
know,
primal.
Build a relationship.
Yeah, it's
loosen
primal.
Up your tie.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Nobody wants to do that anymore. Everybody, I mean, you go to these conferences, you can tell they've been watching too much Shark Tank, and it's like, and you know, they're scripted and are like, and we would like people like you to participate. I'm like, you haven't told me anything I haven't seen yet. But you know, there's a whole reason for that. And I think what people have to understand is that if you're in real estate, you can never, ever violate the second rule of real estate. The first rule of real estate is location, location, location. Second rule of real estate is to never stop raising capital.
Yep.
Once you stop raising capital, guess what happens? There's a whole generation
of business.
People, Jamal, yeah, who are relying on banks to buy distressed foreclosed stuff. Guess what the banks aren't going to be lending on? Distressed and foreclosed stuff. You're going to have to deal with private lenders, building your own fund pool, or doing something to take advantage of it. Because the number one thing that you need to solve, and I see a lot of people come into this from like computer sciences and other quantitative type of things, is that they think that it's like something that looks great on a spreadsheet, but there's a tremendous more that goes on, as you know, besides just looking at numbers on a spreadsheet. Anybody can do that. AI can do that for you. The real relationship is where the real value comes. And unless you're building your network to its highest and best use, you're not going to be going very far.
I think you just gave a secret away for the AI, artificial intelligence, ChatGPT, and all of that stuff that's going on right now. A lot of people believe that that's going to take over the world. But really, you know, there's always going to be a need for a human aspect of this, man. How do you feel about that?
There's always going to need to, at some point, until I don't know how long, there's always going to be a carbon-based form until we're replaced. People are going to need to have that, you know, us moist robots around, you know, talking to people and everything. That's not to say that things can't change, but I think for the foreseeable future, I mean, it's moving quick. That could change. I think it's still people just want that dope, that serotonin hit. They want to be with people who are like them to invest in things. They don't want to be with people who are like them. They want to be with people who they perceive are smarter and better than they
better.
Are.
That's right, man. At least I do. I'm sure you feel the same way, man.
That's why I'm with you, Jamal. Yes. I mean, you
always trying to improve, amazing. Man, right?
Always, always. Don't be afraid of my venture stuff. Anyway, go ahead.
So
now
quick
that you
question,
say
man.
You want to improve, yes.
Yeah, that's right. Of course, man. Mm-hmm. So what type of mindset shift does it take for somebody who's, let's say, the ordinary person, they don't know the Fortune 500 company owners. They're not necessarily mingling with these people yet, but they and they're afraid to invest into themselves at this point. Like, what type of mindset shift would it take for them to be able to put themselves in the same rooms as these people?
I think the mindset shift should be something that's very simple, where you are being of service to someone else, where you're helping them, and what you're doing is you're learning in the process. But when you go out and ask for people things, like I've helped this, I'll tell you a real story. I've helped this one guy out a lot, and he came back to me with over $1 million in investment because I've helped him with that. I never asked for anything. I knew he had a lot of money, but he kept reading my emails, and he was like, oh, how come I haven't been in this? Well, now we're talking, you know, now we're beyond, you know, the bar talk. Now you know what we're doing for, you know, what we do for real life. And that sparks up the whole different kind of relationship there. You have to be relationship oriented, and you have to be humble. And if you look at people, you know, serve others, right? That's a big, big manifesto of a lot of churches. You can meet a lot of investors in churches too. There's a term for that, you know, but you know, religious affiliations and everything. Bernie Madoff did that too, but that's a whole different story. But you have to remember that there's other areas too. Today, people are much more social, especially since the pandemic. You want to join like the Lions Club. You want to join these committees where there's very wealthy people who have a lot of time, but they don't have a lot of, you know, they don't have a lot of activities going on. Social clubs. If you're in an urban city like Miami, like where I am in New York, you should be out every night. Like I've had to change my, I used to go to bed at like 8:30. Now I go to bed at like 11:30. You know, and that means, you know, I have to structure my day. I wake up just as early, but I make it a point to go out there and network with as many people as possible. And that's really where, hey, I remember you. Oh, yeah, you know, Sal, you know, the game show host, whatever. They remember you. And that's how you build a relationship. And then immediately I'd get right onto LinkedIn and find these people. And now, then when you're, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, like me, man, I strategically moved into a golf course community so that I can surround myself with people who like the golf, because usually when people like the golf, they probably have a little bit of change. And
they
we can
do.
Do
it's
some
a,
business
it's a
together.
Very wealthy man's sport. I mean, golf is sort of dying right now because a lot of people can't afford it. And there's golf memberships are down and people are trying to sell their memberships. So the people who are surviving are not the the nouveau riche. They're the ones who are going to be the what we call the older, more established people, and that's who exactly you want to target, because they've seen the rotating door of like people come in and out. And I thought too, in New York during the go-go 90s, during the IPO boom, there were people who had money. Actually, you know what I saw at last, which was really interesting? So a year ago in Miami at Art Basel, there were a bunch of all these crypto bros over at the Fountain Blue, and they ran up a $15,000 ticket right at the bar. And I'm like, this isn't going to last forever. These guys look like they have no other skills but betting on things going up. And guess what? It just dissipated. So, man. You know, they all see it. You know, all country clubs see it. It's just, you know, it's just a fact of the economy. When interest rates go low, people think they're a little smarter than they are, and they overpay for stuff. We've seen this in multifamily, of course. There's going to be a lot of distress there and everything. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, that's the cycle of life.
So my question to you is, you know, obviously there's some hurdles that people are going to face, man. Like, what are some of the hurdles that people will face when trying to raise capital?
You have to not be raising capital for yourself. If you're starting out for yourself, you do not want to be raising money. Because what happens is that you are going to be deathly afraid of making mistakes and losing friends and family money. People who are investing in you, Jamal, don't know anything about your deals. They like to say they do, right? But they're motivated by greed. Everybody has a greed gene that's expressed differently. But they're really investing in you when you think about it, right? And your dexterity and your ability to change things if things go sideways. However, in order to get to that point, what I would suggest people do is that they raise money for people's deals who are much more established than they are, showing that they have the chops to actually raise money and go through the whole thing. Because the hardest thing and every developer needs and everybody needs is raising money. And if you're able to get into persuasion and influence and really study that, where you're able to put together like a really what we call a book of business, then you're not going to starve, because anytime you have an opportunity, people are going to trust you. But you need to be able to prove yourself first by being the money guy, perhaps, for a lot of these other experienced operators and sponsors. Then you build a track record that way, and you're learning a skill set that very few people have.
You know what that reminds me of? It's almost like being an intern of the billionaire real estate developer and working for free for a while until you can build the relationships that they have and the skills that they have just by being around them, surrounding yourself with that person, and then going out there and doing it yourself.
Yeah, there was an article that was published in the Wall Street Journal when I was working at Goldman Sachs. Even though the bonuses were very high, if you were to look at the number of hours we put in, people at Burger King were making more money than we were. But we were learning a different skill, right? There to get abused, like anything, not abused, but you know what I mean. You know, it's because you're learning a trade like anything else.
It was like when I was on Wall Street, man, it was the same exact thing.
It's a trade.
I made $500 a month on Wall Street for an entire year and a half before I made a dime.
See, that's how it works, you know? Yeah, it works. I can tell you many funny stories, but you have to understand that like the biggest and highest use of anything in venture or anything in real estate today is being able to raise capital, because AI is probably going to take away all the other jobs except the personality, the charisma, and things that you develop professionally to be able to work with investors to raise money from them on demand.
Very true, man. So, you know, I before we jump into some of the meat that I wanted to talk about today, I know that you were talking about sports teams. Did you want to dig into that a little bit?
Yeah. So, I mean, what we're doing here, and we'll talk about like the download and everything in a moment, but, you know, we're seeing a lot of opportunities right now. And because we have a track record in other things, and because I have a very good network, I've been able to put together perhaps a consortium that will be investing into professional sports teams, whether that's league soccer, Premier League, or NFL. The Holy Grail is NFL, and then it's NBA, and then maybe NHL, and then I'm not really a big sports fan, and then Major League Baseball, but that has like a quagmire of like salary cap issues and everything, which is kind of, you know, very difficult, and something we'll be hosting on a podcast, actually, that you'll be invited to, Jamal.
Excellent.
Pretty soon. But when you look at it, I'm able to use the same investors who invest in my real estate deals, put them into other stuff, and then also put them into sports.
Yeah. I just had somebody ask me to invest into a movie. I know nothing about the movie business, but that's something I'm considering. You know what I mean? Usually people who's investing into sports, they have their names on park benches, on hospitals, and
because it's legitimacy. Because exactly, behind your back, Jamal, everybody
says. I was just telling my wife that the other day.
That I know the guy, Jamal, who owns, you know, part of the Raiders or has the name of a library written across the side, his name on the side of a library. That's what we want to, that status, legitimacy, and immortality that people are grasping for.
That's
you
the
can
word
either
right
go
there.
To space. You can either go to space like Bezos and, you know, all the others. Or what our families do is that they're investing alongside Nobel Prize winning CEOs and co-founders into diseases and things like that. There's a prestige there, and that's what it is because you're selling status.
And you're basically making your name infinitely known. You know what I mean? So like,
of course,
when you get to that level of investment, it's not about the money anymore. It's about making your name last. And that's what I'm getting. That's what I'm learning from that. So
that's
I appreciate
the next step. That's what people want today. It's called legitimacy. There's a book I wrote about it. It's called Investing Legacy. I'm not here to sell it. It's available. I narrated it myself. but it talks about why the drivers are for the 1,000th of the 1%, not 1%. Everybody's a 1% if you live on the coast, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it. People who aren't 1%ers are unfortunately in middle America mostly. But when you look at the 0.001%, you're talking about, you know, people who have a net worth of over $100 million. And that's the type of people who we work with.
That's awesome, man. So obviously, you know, there's some obstacles, there's some failures that people are going to, some mistakes that people are going to make when they're trying to raise this capital, man. I know we wanted to talk about the 20 mistakes, the 20 failures. 20.
We're going to go through all of them.
We could go through a portion of them. And then they got to join the webinar that we're going to do in a few weeks to get the rest.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. I don't want to lift up our skirts too high.
So yes, let's give the best ones. So what are some of the things that people fail at when trying to raise capital? I know we spoke about some of them already, but let's talk about some of these.
All things being equal, and you guys are friends and you have a relationship and you're raising money. Number one, you always have to not be afraid of the money. And what does that mean is that you have to put the terms out. And this sounds so simple, but everybody screws it up, Jamal, is that they never use a deadline, right? They have a fund, but they're just, it's like a legal document. Okay, you want me to read 180 pages of legalese like that? Nobody has the time for that. Nobody's obligated to read that. There's nothing in the Constitution or the Bible that says you have to read a 180-page doc because Jamal sent it to me. Okay, I can't believe that. But you also have to be able to call them and talk to them and walk them through it and remind them that there's a deadline. And the real wealth and fortune in this business is in the follow-up. Does that make sense? You're never going to get them the first time because everybody's getting bite-sized pieces of vomit from, like, you know, their wives, family, girlfriends, whatever, on their cell phones. You have to compete with that. And if you don't have a deadline, just like anything else on television, even the ShamWow guy, then that's, you don't have to be as cheesy as that guy. But, you know, you have to make sure in all of your materials and emails that you put when you're doing a fundraise that there is a deadline. If you don't have a deadline, you're going to die.
I think
and
the
your
deadline
deal will go stale. You'll go stale.
Yeah, exactly. I think the deadline creates what's called scarcity as well. For people, right? So when people don't like what's called FOMO, they don't want to have that fear of missing out. So that deadline is going to increase that FOMO and make people move and shake if they're truly interested in what you're presenting.
The other thing, with that is that just because a lawyer puts together a package for you and you pay him like $20,000-$30,000 for it doesn't necessarily mean people are going to read it. Right. So you have to make sure that everything is basically spelled out in the body of the email. What I hate and what losers and novices do is that they just hit the forward button on something. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to unpack all this myself. Like, do you think I have the time to do this? Do you? So that's a novice move. It really is. And if you read my emails, which I know you do, it's very well laid out. It's written in like a fourth grade language. And it says deadline in ugly highlight because now everybody knows that Sal's serious. And you got to hold to the deadlines. If you don't hold to the deadlines, then you lose credibility.
That's right. Okay. That's right. And you can't fear if you don't raise the capital by the time the deadline is up, don't lose track of what you're trying to do. You know what I mean? Because most people they'll fold themselves. Oh, I'm going to extend the deadline. And that's credibility.
And the other thing they do too, which is really like a double-edged sword, is that they try to like cheapen themselves by saying they're going to lower management fees. Right. That is the equivalent of, you know, cutting your nose off to spite your face. Here's why. There's been inflation in everything, especially legal, especially accounting. You know, all these services are paying people more to get them to come into the office to even do your taxes or distributions. And you have to look at it that way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, man. So you have fear, right? You have to have a deadline.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What are some of the other things that people should look out for?
I like to, you know, in the thing we're giving away for the webinar, we like to mix and match, right? Mm-hmm. You know, from New York, the diners, remember you used to get the deli duel, you can get the pastrami and the turkey club or something. Well, we like to use the number one thing you should use is the deadline. But another thing that you should use too, especially if you're raising a lot of money or tranches. And what I do is I set up tranches so that everybody who comes in first gets all the goodies. It's like an inverted pyramid. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And then everybody else below gets like, you know, they get maybe like a cash flow. Well, I shouldn't say that, but they're, you know, they're more junior. They don't have the same, you know, pref. They don't have the same amount. They don't have the same rights. They're sort of lower man on the totem pole because people don't want to be seen as being second class. So when you tell them that when you're closing the first tranche, you have to make sure we're closing tranche one. Everybody who comes, you know, early bird gets all the worms here. come on over. The people who wait, they're not going to get anything. Now, you can go back and say, look, Jamal, I know you're on family vacation and I know you're a week late. And you'll be like, but please let me in tranche one. Of course, you can do that. But you can't do that all the time, right? You see what I mean? But it does give you like sort of like leverage with your investors, because it's not you putting it together. It's really the sponsor or the operator. You're just the middleman putting it together. And you're like, look, I have big investors over here who are expecting you to do what you say you're going to do, no matter if you're in Disney World or not. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So same thing with the movie thing, right? So he said, if I'm an early investor, I'm going to get, you know, executive creditability on a movie and the credits and things like that. And I'll also get a certain amount of shares, but it's an international profit. So because it's going to be an international movie, right? So they said if they're looking for early investors, those early investors have certain perks that the others won't have. Same thing in real estate, right? If I'm raising money, let's say I got a real estate development project going on, the early investors are going to get certain perks and probably
correct
more profit than the secondary investors.
Same exact binary. So you say by April 21st, it's tranche two opens. Tomorrow we're launching tranche two of Thrive Biosciences, not tomorrow, but in 2 days. Mm-hmm. And that is going to have different terms. And people would be like, oh, but Sal, I wanted to get in. Well, you know, and then at that point, it becomes like a flirt, right? It becomes like mm-hmm. a game of, do you let them do it or not? You know, maybe they're, you know, but at the end of the day, you can always let them in for the same one and be like, okay, just don't let it happen again. But you have to get people's attention. Does that make sense?
That's
because
right.
If they don't feel like they're getting attention, the hardest thing in the world right now, you know, this as a podcaster, and mm-hmm. probably the most valuable thing in the world today is attention. People are paying more for attention than they do a barrel of oil. If you think about it, right? You buy social media, so you sort of get that. That's incredible where we are today. And my job, as much as I like to say, you know, the CEO and, you know, of all these investment offices, I'm really a glorified game show host, because what I have to do is I have to make sure that I have my investors' attention at all times. Does that make sense? Because, whether, you know, I'm going to be after you for this webinar afterwards. I'm like, hey, you like movies? Well, you'll love life sciences. No. and if also you need due diligence on that, don't hesitate to, you know, to peek that over. That's high risk. I've done it twice in Broadway shows, so I know a little bit about it, and I know a lot. But most importantly, I got the network to help you. I don't need to be a professional, see?
Right.
And that's really what happens. But I think, if you know, getting back to one thing, I'm just going to go into another, which is important, is giving away gifts. What does that look like? So if you're a real estate developer, maybe like a nice drawing. You know, I have one friend of mine, he's raising money, he's a sponsor. And for his latest deal, he went to the city hall and found the old timey development plans, and he had them photocopied and he gave them to all of his investors to see what the building looked like during its building. And then after, when it's rehabbed, you know, they'll be able to. So now it's a conversation piece on the wall. Like, why do you have a picture of a building from Main Street here from like 1856 or 1900s? Yeah. Well, it's funny. I invested in the community. Now it becomes an elevation of status. One thing we did do, and you'll really like this, and this is our segue into sports. And I hope I'm not talking too much, Jamal. So just
keep talking, brother.
So we had to do this deal. It was sports related. It's a company called AI Scout. And if you go to AIScout.io, it is basically.
I've heard of it.
Okay. So we were early investors into that. And we made this investment in the summer. And you know from New York culture that nobody likes to work in August, right? Nobody does anything. So here I am. I was in Vegas at the time. And I'm like, how the hell am I going to get people's attention to write a check, you know, to invest in this, right? Because this was a very special circumstance. It was outside of a fund. And so I had to come up with a plan. And the plan I came up with is, how do I, you know, usually in the business on Wall Street, as you know, there's like the acrylic deal toys, and some guy in Flushing charges way too much for them. He has a whole stranglehold on them. But you get this thing that says, I invested in Airbnb or whatever. Perfect. I said that no piece of acrylic is going to be enough to get anyone to pay attention to me, no matter how smooth I am or, no, you know, how engaging or how persistent I am. And I don't know if you know the story, but Chelsea Football Club had recently changed hands. One of the oligarchs, Roman Abramovich, had to sell, and he sold to a guy by the name of Todd Bowie. Todd Bowie now owns that and several other things, and he was a lead investor in this company called AI Scout. And I called the CEO, and I said, you got to do me a favor. We really want to get into this. We were Paripasu, another big investor named Raptor, which you haven't heard of. It's sort of like the best sports investors is investing in things like FanDuel and, all those other, high profile companies. So they know the business and they're strategic and they make a lot of money doing it. And I said, and this took a little bit of chutzpah. And I said, can you do me a favor? I said, could you ask Todd if we do this deal for every investor, if each investor got an autographed jersey by the entire Chelsea football team, would that work? And he said, yes. So now all of a sudden, when I tell people that are getting an autograph by, and I'll show you a photo of it and I'll send it to you too, you'll see that the whole team signed, the jersey. That's incredible because now people post that in their home and all of a sudden they have summer barbecues and they're like, what do you know about? Who do you know about Chelsea Football Club? Well, we made an investment with this family office and all. Now, because, see where I'm going with
Becomes
it? You know what I mean?
the
Yeah, because these guys were already thinking about who they're going to invite over. They weren't even thinking about the minimum investment of 200,000. They were like, no. This is amazing. Now you have to fulfill on that, of course, and we are, and we have. But it's just one of those things, and it's called the premium. And when you offer something to someone like that, it doesn't really have to be directed to the investment. But it's enough to get people to say, hey, I want a piece of this. And we're doing it also with other things. We did a deal with a Nobel Prize winning, as I said before, one of the Nobel Prize winners for physiology and medicine. And one of the deals we did was called Apricity Health. And what we're doing is, and even though we did this last year, we're doing another one with a different co-founder, but the same Nobel Prize winner in a sort of a roll down in this company. And I said, my partners, I said, what we need to do is put together a Nobel Prize with, Vectus Therapeutics on it, our family office name, and then principal investment. So now you have two Nobel Prize winning medals, right? Now they're made of like, stainless steel or whatever it is, but it's something that you collect now with each investment because you already have one Nobel Prize. You don't want another one for this deal? See what I'm saying? So now there's another fear of missing out because we've made it like it's a collection, if that makes sense.
Man, that's awesome. So you're just basically taking the basics of sales and psychology in order
Yes.
to raise capital.
Yes, to get people to move. To
Yep.
get people to move, right? Because a lot of these people are all into like, I got to do due them. If you know this person never passed math class, there's no way he's ever going to be able to do due diligence on any of your real estate deals. All
Right.
right. And you have to, and this is like where people get taken advantage of. But the point is that we're talking to people here knowing that we have the same values and ethics and we don't take advantage of people. And we're not trying to manipulate anyone, but we're trying to coerce them. And it's like boat show
Right.
sales. Like I was at the boat show over the week. Like there's a difference between manipulation and persuasion. And when you go to the boat show, you expect to be bedazzled with drinks. You expect to have pretty showgirls there, talking to you, inviting you onto the boat. You sell a boat, they get a commission, you're happy because you just got this new boat. Manipulation is when one person takes advantage of the other. We don't want people taking advantage of other people here,
That's
right? And
right.
so that's why, these are just tricks and hacks that I've used throughout the years to get people to move fast onto deals that nobody really want to invest into. Because think about it, who wants to invest in life science deals preclinical? Nobody. Nobody wants to sit through high school chemistry and biology, right? So you have to make it fun. And that's really when you start to make it fun, that's where you start to see a lot of the success.
Now you got 20 of these, like we said, and
Not
we're gonna
enough
be,
time.
yeah, we don't have enough time, but we're definitely gonna be doing a live webinar, and
Sure,
we're gonna be
yeah.
giving some things away as well.
Yes, yes, yes.
I'm gonna go ahead and link that webinar below in this
Okay.
in the description box. So if you guys are listening to this on a podcast, check the show notes. But if you're watching this on YouTube, check the description box
Please
for the
do.
link. Now, in addition to that, my man Sal has several books and things like that. What's your favorite book out of the ones that you've put together, man?
I'll tell you the one I had the most. The first two were technical books. They're blue and red ones. The white one is a little salacious, and that sort of gets into the motivations. And anyone who's breaking into this business, I would urge them to read the white one first before the blue and the red ones. Okay, even though it says fund management, you can buy all three. I'm not gonna sue
Where
you
can
for
they
that
buy it?
anywhere.
Where
Yep,
should they go to buy it?
they can go to salvatorebuscemi.com. That's salvatorebuscemi.com/books. And they're all there and some free downloads and some other stuff. But we have it on
Perfect.
Audibles. We have it, they're on the web. If you go to that website, it'll give you all the different versions digital that you need. but I would start with investing legacy first because it's a quick read, it's fun, it's breezy, but it's the real New Yorker in there. Like I tell us, I mean, Jamal, you get it. Some other people are like clutching their pearls, but
Yeah,
it's
I'm gonna
not
make
as.
sure I link all that for you too, man.
Yeah,
For
no, I
sure.
appreciate it. And Amazon would love your 5-star review on that too.
So that's what I'll do. I'll link it and I'll have a Amazon link for you guys at the bottom to review it as well. Now, in
Perfect.
addition to that, so that takes care of your books. We covered, some of the steps that, some of the things that were part of that 20 failures, but we're gonna cover that in more detail in the next couple of weeks on our webinar. Were we giving away something along with that webinar as well, man?
I think we will. People who go there are going to get a copy of my latest 25-page guidebook, Calling the Capital. Okay.
Boom.
And what that is, it's basically in 15 minutes, you'll know as much as I do about how to call the capital from people, how to ask for the money without sounding cheesy, because you're always going to have a gun to your head. Somebody's always going to have a deadline. You just forget to use the deadline. And if you're able to do that, then things become a lot easier for you. And then if you read that, and you feel as there's a, my other books are in the back, but then you can move on to other things like, the technicals of how to like deploy the money and how, to raise the money, not just call it, but raise it legally and all of that stuff using documents and pitch books and things.
Sounds good, man. Now, Sal, look, I know we don't have a lot of time, but my question to you is, if you had to provide our listeners with some last words of advice, what would those words be?
Be a bury your ego. Be open-minded and be willing to serve others, because the more you serve others, the further you're going to get along in life. You are, especially in this business, because it's relational. And people will never, ever remember you for your titles or anything. They'll remember you for how you make them feel.
I love that, man. But look, man, we're going to be doing a lot more together with Sal. We got a lot of things coming up. Be sure to check the description box for all of the links for, our webinar and the downloads and things like that we have for you guys. So make sure that you check the links in the description box for all of the information that you need. Also, just remember, guys, you can do this no matter where you're starting from right now, as long as you're willing to put in the work. Everything takes work, but when you're willing to put in the work, build the relationships, and you're not discounting yourself,
Yes.
anything is possible.
Correct.
Sal and I, we come from New York City, where anything is possible. If you can make it in New York, right, you can make
You
it
make it
anywhere, they
anywhere.
say.
Yeah, you can make it anywhere.
But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you are in, let's say, middle America, or if you're on one of the coasts. It doesn't matter.
Nope.
If you're willing to develop the skills that it takes to be able to raise capital, Sal's buying he's going to be one of the owners of a sports team. Come on, guys. That's crazy. You know what I mean? That's one of my goals, man.
See,
I'm gonna own a
legitimacy.
Knicks one day. I'm gonna own a New York
Well,
Knicks and a New York Giants.
you do whatever you want. I'll show you how to do it. I don't know if they'll win, but that I can't help you with. But yeah,
Yeah,
that's
for
beyond
sure. But
my purview.
that's just a goal that I have for myself. Sal knows how to do it. Relationships are important. Surround yourself with the right people, you can accomplish anything.
And
But
always be a
listen,
learner, a lifelong learner. You can always
love it.
outlearn someone else. You can always outlearn someone else.
That's right. But make sure you're on that webinar training. Check the link in the description box. We'll have a replay there for you. In the meantime, keep learning and you will keep earning. And we look forward to seeing you guys on the next one.